The cricket coach used to be the means by which players got from the bar to the ground and back again, but not anymore. What does a cricket coach actually do at the top level? Start your engines. It's cricket, only better.
What an innings, what a player. Take a bow, Ben Stokes.
Brian Charles Lara becomes the first man in the history of the game to register a score of 400.
Six sixes in an over. Yuvraj Singh finishes things off in style.
England have won the World Cup by the barest of margins.
Betfair Betting Podcast presents Cricket, Only Better.
Welcome back to Cricket, Only Better, the podcast that pedestals relevance over irreverence, data over who's greater, and falls asleep at night, counting percentage points instead of sheep. I'm Ed Hawkins, betting.betfair's cricket correspondent, and I'm here to try to find you winners.
And I'm Sam Collins, filmmaker, journalist, and armchair fan, who's here to say, hang on, Ed, can we not get too bogged down in implied probability and at least pretend that we're having some fun?
Yeah, but it's obviously a combination that's working because Betfair have allowed us to come back for a second go.
Do we know they listened to the first one?
It's certainly possible that they didn't. But after our debut last week, I do have a correction to make. I incorrectly stated that it was Mr. T who said, I love it when a plan comes together. It was, in fact, Hannibal from the A-Team.
Okay, it says here in the script that you've given me that I should respond, I pity the fool.
You're not supposed to show people what's behind the curtain, but...
This is all part of transparency. New accountability, transparency. If they're going to tell a bad joke, then at least I want people to know where it came from.
No more obscure 80s TV references this week.
I think let's move on very swiftly. So what have we got on the show today, this week?
Sit up and straighten your tie. We have cricketing royalty with us. Lawrence Booth, editor of the Cricket Bible, the Wisden Almanac, is here to talk about the impact a new coach, Chris Silverwood, may or may not have on that feeble England batting lineup in Test cricket.
Entirely logical, given that he was a bowling coach. Okay, that should be interesting, because England's USP over the last two or three years has been inability to score a run. So be useful, presumably, for your disciples to understand whether that will continue.
Yeah, indeed. So we're looking ahead at the Test series in New Zealand, and we're trying to work out whether England are going to be a team which has the same characteristics that they have had over the last 2-3 years. For betting purposes, that's really important. We've also got strategies for the Women's Big Bash League, Australia v Sri Lanka T20 advice, and a unique mind-boggling way to help you make sense of the ICC World T20 qualifiers.
I'm actually genuinely looking forward to hearing how you give people advice on Namibia Singapore.
Oh, it's going to be mind-blowing.
No, but I am. There's lots, because it's fascinating, the amount of data that now can be given on these sorts of games. So I'm very much looking forward to hearing you make sense of it.
Yeah, we've got something special, actually.
Good stuff. No pressure. So first up, England back in Test action next month in New Zealand. The question is this a new era? Ed, I know you've got some odds for us.
It's not a new era in terms of England's prices. They're going off as favourite for that first test. 5-4 with Betfair Sportsbook. New Zealand are 13-8, and the draw is 16-5.
Sorry, but what could possibly make England favourites for that first test match?
Well, they know that everyone's going to be backing them. New Zealand are consistently outsiders, pretty much whoever they play. They know the money's going to be coming for England, so they can short them prohibitively because they don't need to be taking a risk on a genuine price.
So even though the first test of the first innings of the first test in 2018, England were bowled out for 58 and lost by over an innings, they are still making New Zealand outsiders.
That's right.
It's just crazy. It's crazy.
There's crazy value there. That's what you say, Sam. Can we have some hush in a room for cricketing deity, editor of the Wisden Almanac, the Cricket Bible, the Sacred Parchment? Lawrence Booth joins us on the line now from India. Lawrence, how are you doing?
Hello, Ed. Thanks for that unnecessary introduction. I'm fine, thanks. I'm in Goa. It's raining, would you believe? So the bad weather's following me around.
Are you on holiday, or are you going to be taking in some cricket while you're there?
No, I'm on holiday, but I'm off to New Zealand next week for England's tour there. So it's a kind of, well, in India, it's always a busman's holiday, isn't it? You can't really escape cricket. Every time I turn on the TV, there's highlights of South Africa collapsing in a heap in the Test series. and people always want to talk to you about cricket. So no escape, I'm afraid.
Indeed. A useful link to New Zealand, because that is what we want to talk to you about. England have got a new coach, Chris Silverwood, and punters are well used to England's batting being woeful, and it has been for 3 years or so. Is that team characteristic going to change with Silverwood taking over, do you think?
Well, he has stated his case fairly early, which is he wants the test team to return to old-fashioned batting, really, which means crease occupation, hanging around for hours on end, kind of Mike Atherton-style stuff, which hasn't been possible, or hasn't happened, let's say, for the last few years, partly because opening the batting in England has been one of the most perilous jobs in world cricket. Alistair Cook retired bemoaning the fact the last 2 years of his career were tough, partly because the Duke's ball was moving around, they left grass on the pitches. You know, if you were averaging 30 as a test opener in England, you were doing a pretty good job. So he's got a big job on his hands in that respect. And actually, New Zealand away isn't the ideal place to start. Good English batsmen down the years, their test averages in New Zealand often drop by about 5 or 6 because the pitches do a bit. It's probably as similar to England as any test country gets. And of course, last time they were there 18 months ago or so, they bowled up for 58 in Auckland. So it's not an easy place to start, but that is the hope, that Silverwood can arrest this batting slump, and they can start putting some top order runs together, so that Joe Root comes in at 150 for two, not 20 for two.
But Lawrence, what will actually be different about Silverwood? Because presumably the team will have the same batting coach under Silverwood. It's Graham Thorpe still there, isn't he?
Yes, Graham Thorpe's still there. I mean, that is one of the issues. That you know, do you want a technical batting coach, which Thorpe probably isn't? You know, he's done a few press conferences over the last year or so, more than Silverwood, in fact. Silverwood was his kind of his oppo, if you like, the bowling coach, the Thorpe's batting coach. And what was clear about Thorpe was he was more of a mental batting coach. Sorry, that makes him sound like he was going around doing daft things, but he was more he was trying to get inside the batsman's mind. And of course, he was very good at that. But the question is, do you want a technical coach? Now, the guy who Silverwood beat to the job, Gary Kirsten, I think would have been perfect in that respect. He's an old school, nuggety, sorry to use a cliche, left-handed opener who knew how to grind out runs and make the most of what limited talent he had. It remains to be seen how Silverwood plays it, whether he thinks that Thorpe is enough or whether he wants to bring in a guy who can actually improve the techniques of the England players he's working with.
Duncan Fletcher and Andy Flower were certainly very hands-on. Trevor Bayliss is very hands-off. What do you think that Fletcher or Flower would have done with this England team?
Well, I think in the first place, they'd have been more careful about who they allowed into the team. There was a bit of a revolving doors policy ever since Andrew Strauss retired in 2012, really, among the opening batsmen. No one got more than 6 or 7 tests. Some of them were ditched harshly. Michael Carberry, probably one of those. They'd have made sure they understood the nature of the goods that were being passed in their direction. I mean, Bayliss, by his own admission, had never seen the likes of Mark Stoneman play, for example, when he was picked. So that wouldn't have happened. But they'd also, once they'd got the raw material in their hands, they'd have tried to improve them as players. I mean, Fletcher famously tried to get English batsmen to play what he called the forward press in Asia, which was not fully committing against spin bowling, but keeping your weight balanced so you could go back or forward with equal facility. And that seemed to do a decent job. I mean, you talk to the guys who played under him, and they swore blindly he was the best coach. The batsmen did anyway. He was the best coach they ever played under. The bowlers weren't always so enamoured of Fletcher. Flower's another one who took a very rigorous approach. So, like I say, it does come down to how Silverwood sort of configures the backroom staff. He has one advantage, which is he's picked Dominic Sibley, who seems to be an old school player. Before his time, he's only 24, but he faced more than 1,000 balls, more than anyone else in the county championship last season, and seems to know how to grind out runs. Now, if England are going back to a not very pleasant to look at, but solid opening batsman, I don't think anyone will complain, really. He's precisely the kind of guy who, if he comes off, could work well.
Lawrence, I've just got some stats here for you on percentage win rates for England coaches down the years. Bayliss, Flower and Fletcher have identical percentage win rates. 43% Bayliss, 44% Flower, 43% Fletcher. And it begs the question, how much difference can a coach actually make? Because England will be basically winning at the same rate, whoever is in charge.
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, my guess is, without having seen the stats, that the loss percentage for Bayliss is higher than the other two. I mean, you also have to take into account, you know, the state of the team when the coach took over, and when Fletcher took over, England were absolutely rock bottom. They were bottom of the old Wisden World Championship after losing to New Zealand at home in 99. Remember Nasser Hussain in tears on the Oval balcony? He turned them from easy beats into hard beats. They drew more games, and they gradually started winning more. Flower then took them to the next level, and there was Peter Moores in between, but Flower was the guy who turned them into a winning machine until that all went wrong. I mean, Bayliss's sort of brand of Test cricket was a bit too close to one day cricket for a lot of critics' comfort. You know, they went for broke, and Root seemed to like that, but it means they'd win one and lose one, and then win one and lose one. So there was no sense of consistency. What a coach will do, will hopefully he assesses the group of players under him and works out how to get the best out of them. I'll give you one example with Silverwood that seems to have worked quite well so far, and that's Stuart Broad. Now, successive captains and coaches have tried and failed to get Broad to pitch the ball up. How many times have we seen him and Jimmy Anderson, especially at a green top at Lord's, bowl short of a length and let the opposition off the hook? Now, Silverwood seems, in his role as bowling coach, to have somehow persuaded Broad that it will work to his benefit if he goes to that fuller length. And we saw what he did against David Warner this summer. He had him on toast, got him out seven times, said he was bowling faster than ever, and hey presto, the fuller length seemed to work. Now, Silverwood's man management skill there, I think, came to the fore, which was that he persuaded Broad that it was somehow Broad's idea. Now, that's good coaching, as far as I'm concerned. And if you can apply that kind of thinking to everyone in the team, then the team should improve.
Okay, Lawrence. So with the batting, this is it's a, you know, top seven in flux. There's only two survivors from that series 18 months ago, Root and Stokes in that top seven. Who do you think, because the aim of what we're trying to do is help people to find value in the betting, who would be the guys that you would be backing to succeed in this series?
I think Rory Burns should do pretty well, not necessarily because of the change of coach, but because he seems to have, you know, worked very hard on his game. He was the only opening batsman in the Ashes who made any kind of impact. And some people said his 100 in the first test at Edgbaston was lucky, but, you know, he needed to get the short ball during the course of the series. So that told of a guy who wants to go away and improve his game. Sibley will be interesting. I think he'll get the nod ahead of Zach Crawley just because Sibley's stats were so impressive and he's precisely the kind of guy they want. Root at four, you know, he's gone up and down so often. He's now back at the position he wanted. Bayliss wanted him at three, Root wants to go at four. So if he doesn't score runs in that four, he's got no excuses.
Is Ollie Pope the great white hope, Lawrence? He's got a fantastic first-class record, and most analysts are saying that he's going to be able to transfer that to the top level. What's your view?
Yeah, it's exciting. I think I'd looked it up just before I came on. Average first class average of 58.79, and someone's written recently that no one with more than 30 plus first class innings among English batsmen has ever averaged more in first class cricket. So that's quite a selling point. He came in for a couple of tests against India two summers ago, but he was batting straight away at number four, which was two places higher than what he'd go in for Surrey, and that was a slight issue. He looked slightly uncomfortable there and was dropped after two tests, only three innings of that. It seemed a bit harsh, but then got injured at the start of the season that's just gone. But when he came back, was straight back into the run. So whenever I've seen him, he looks incredibly confident. He's got shots all around the wicket. He's a kind of modern brand of player, a beautiful cover drive. I don't think you fluke those figures. Okay, you could say that batting number six at the Oval is about as comfortable as it gets in English cricket, but it's been Division One, and it's not like he's getting 100 and getting out. He's getting double hundreds. So if he doesn't carve out a decent test career, I'd be surprised. I mean, we did say that about Haseeb Hameed, didn't we? And he fell away, but perhaps other reasons there. So I'm very hopeful about Pope. I mean, New Zealand may not be the place he cracks it, but I think over the next, I'd be surprised if he didn't go to the next Ashes, put it that way.
So let's put you under pressure. Are England going to be a 20 for four team in this series, or are they going to be a 200 for four team?
Well, they could easily be 20 for four, because if Trent Bolt swings it, any team in the world would be in trouble, and it's a new look top order. But it's a new era, and sometimes new eras can, you know, everyone's in the zone. Joe Root has marked this out as the start of a journey that will end, culminate with the 21-22 Ashes. I think they're going to be up for it, England, even though it's not a World Test Championship series. I actually think it'll probably be one all this series. I think both, they'll probably cancel each other out. I don't see England collapsing for 58. Equally, I don't see them making 500. It'll be a kind of medium scoring dogfight. And it should be a good one, actually. It'd be one of those series, I suspect, where we'll wish there was a third test.
We should also mention England's terrible record away from home, and we'll gloss over the Sri Lanka series win because they managed to win the toss in each of those three tests, batted first, and then used a crumbling, deteriorating wicket to win those games. Just a reminder for people listening in that England don't travel well.
And not alone in that. You know, very few teams win away from home now. When India won in Australia last year, for the first time ever, it was considered a serious effort by them. I mean, England, they're a funny side. They won their last series in South Africa, which was a pretty good win. Stokes making that 258 in Cape Town. As you say, they won in Sri Lanka, which was actually, despite what you've just said, probably a better result than some people gave it credit for. But then, of course, they went to the Caribbean, bombed against West Indies, went 2-0 down, won the consolation test. So they're totally unpredictable away from home. That's one of their problems. And if Silverwood can inject some consistency and Root can help him enact that, then they can improve. Whether they can do it quickly enough and well enough to beat Australia in Australia in 2 years' time is another matter. But you know, not losing in New Zealand is the kind of result they need if they're serious about retaining the Ashes.
All right, Lawrence, I think that about wraps it up. Thank you very much for your time, and hopefully we're going to have you on again soon.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me, Ed.
Great news is we've had some excellent interaction on Twitter, Ed, since the first podcast, which is, after all, what this show is all about. We still want to hear from you guys about your best bets, your worst bets, your mediocre bets, any form of bet we would like to hear from you about, just any stories, in fact, just talk to us, because we like hearing from people. But Red Bull Tea, at Red Bull Tea, has got in touch with some thoughts on the World 2020 qualifiers. And he says Berrington has
Richie Berrington.
Yeah, they're human beings. Let's talk about them properly. But I think maybe it's just character limit. Richie Berrington is top scorer five times in his last, plus joint top scorer twice in his last 20 matches for Scotland, and yet has been priced up around 5-1! Exclamation mark.
Yeah, keep a note of that.
So
that's a nice bit of value, a nice bit of crickonomics for you there. If you've got any crickonomics of your own, please send them in at Cricket Betting.
I think that Red Bull Tea fancies taking a bit of your crown, doesn't he? Maybe he's got an alternative name for his system.
Maybe we'll get him on and we'll have some sort of
top scouting
stats off.
Yes, I'd like that. That would be great to watch the sparks flying as you guys undercut each other on the data dating universe. Anyway, and that leads us on very, very nicely to this week's Mythbuster, which is also a suggestion from the outside world. Last week was Don Bradman, who's exposed to bad value wager, losing punters' money. Ed, perhaps you would like to let us know who we're doing this week.
Yes, the people have spoken. It is Shane Warne. Would you have made money betting the Aussie legend for top bowler in the first innings throughout his test career?
I mean, I'm going to interject here immediately and say that I think this is a bit of a stupid question, because a spinner, generally, you would expect to take wickets in the third or fourth innings rather than the first innings. So I think this is a bit unfair. I'm assuming the answer is not good for Shane Warne, and I think this is a bit of an unfair question. That's my contribution.
I didn't know you were such a Shane Warne fanboy, but listen, we only do first innings because bookmakers only price up the first innings top bowler market. And just to point out that Ravi Ashwin has a 46.6 win rate on the first innings top bowler market, and he is a spinner. So
okay. So I consider myself firmly back in my box. So why don't you tell us what the deal is with Shane Warne then, clever clogs?
So Betfair Sportsbook very kindly gave us an average price for Shane Warne to be top bowler in the first innings. They went for 9-4. Where's your money? Do you think he's going to be plus or minus?
I mean, I think he's minus, because you're talking about a test team that, you know, was very consistent with terms of Glenn McGrath, terms of Jason Gillespie, terms of Brett Lee. And I'd expect seamers to take the wickets in the first innings.
It's down. He would have cost you money over his test career. To £10 level stakes, you would have been down £117.50 on that market.
Interesting.
But it's not all bad, actually.
Okay.
Because in the last 5 years of his career, when he was actually more reliable than he was at the start, as you would expect for a leg spinner in particular, he would have won you money. You'd been plus £68.75 to £10 level stakes.
Interesting. But did Australia maybe Does this coincide with India's rise as a test team? India playing more home tests, Australia playing more tests in the subcontinent, so spinners becoming more relevant. I'm not entirely sure. I haven't researched that. Maybe somebody from the outside world would come in and tell me if I'm right or wrong on that.
Can someone put Sam right or wrong, please, at cricket betting, please, for that musing?
Great. Well, so thank you very much for whoever suggested Shane Warne. We'd love your suggestions for next week. Let's go. So we've had two great Australian players. Let's have someone else, please. Someone slightly more different.
Yeah, it'd be interesting. Different. I mean, it's going to be interesting. It's going to be interesting to see. I suspect a lot of these players are going to be down. Could be a question of who's down less than others.
Yeah.
And we can create our sort of own sort of list of legends who didn't cost you too much money.
Like slightly like the star in a reasonably priced car. Perhaps you can be educating us on what those guys who perhaps overperformed what you would expect them to do. Beyond Brexit, beyond Turkey, you may be forgiven for not knowing that the Women's Big Bash has got underway this week in Australia. Your friend and mine, Ed Hawkins, has been beavering away to give you the best odds on some little surprises over there. Ed, over to you.
The big news, Sam, is that I'm in love. Call my wife, tell her it's over. And I'm not a shallow man. It's not all about looks or personality.
This is like really bad local radio, hospital radio.
Of course it is. Why would it be any better than that? I'm all about top batswoman winning percentage.
Okay.
Elise Perry is the woman of my dreams. A 43.5% win rate for top bat for the Sydney Sixers in the last 16 matches. How about that?
Wow. But I mean, it's illegal not to be in love with Elise Perry, firstly. But secondly, she's wins everything. You know, she's presumably pretty low odds to be next, you know, top goal scorer at the next Women's World Cup.
Really? I mean, she's that good. She can do anything.
She can do anything.
The perfect woman.
Which is a brilliant footballer. You know that.
I didn't know that.
She scored the goal of the tournament at the World Cup a few years ago.
Did she?
Yeah.
I had no idea
Football
about
that. Football World Cup.
I had no idea. I thought you were making a joke.
No. No. She's just an extraordinarily gifted human being.
Who wins you money if you bet of a top Sydney Sixers run scorer in Big Bash matches? Make a note of it, people. Big Bash is going to be around for a long, long time. So there's a bet for you.
Okay. Who else? What else have you got for us?
Well, the Sydney Sixers are a very good team. As you would expect, considering the Renaissance woman, Elise Perry, is their chief run-getter. And unsurprisingly, they're going off as favourites, Betfair Sportsbook, around about 2-1 favourites to win another Big Bash title. Well, they've never failed to make a final. So look, I don't think there's a huge problem with betting Sydney Sixers to go deep into this tournament. I think they're going to make the final. And when they're in the final, you've basically backed a 2-1 chance in a one-off match. So there's likely to be value there. But sort of looking down the list, there's a lot of issues with teams for in-running strategies. And there's some toss biases, which I wanted to draw people's attention to. I can see I think you're glazing over a bit there.
No, I mean, not at all. Go with it.
Adelaide Strikers, who are 6-1 on the outright market. They've got a really poor record batting second. They've only won 7 and they've lost 15. This tournament goes on until December 8th, so very much a for-the-notebook theme, this pod. But other possible strategies to scribble down include Perth Scorchers, who have problems defending targets, 18 defeats and only 9 wins for them, and Sydney Thunder are ace chasers, with 23 wins and only 13 losses. Those two play each other on November the 9th. So fingers crossed, Thunder chase in that one.
And also in Australia, Australia versus Sri Lanka, the first T20 kicks off in Adelaide on Sunday. I've got some notes here. Sri Lanka back to full strength. Lesif Malinga returns to skipper. Bob Fernando, Bunuka Rajapaksa could keep out guys like Mendis, Kusal Pereira, Nirosh and Dick Weller, who also sat out the Pakistan tour. In terms of the form coming into this, Sri Lanka winning 3-0 in Pakistan was one of the biggest gambling upsets of recent times, as we covered last week. Can they do it again? They did win in Australia in 2017. Australia have lost 5 of the last 9. but Sri Lanka lost 6 of the previous 7 to that Pakistan upset. Is to Pakistan, is that right?
Yeah, I think
Sri Lanka, sorry.
Yeah, I think they're going
to
be
Pakistan.
I think Australia are going to be going off short here. And it's a really difficult one to get hold of for punters, and we're not entirely sure we're going to be playing those match odds throughout this series, which starts on Sunday, just precisely because the Sri Lanka team is so difficult to predict.
Yeah.
They've just won 3-0 in Pakistan, and presumably you'd expect them to keep faith with the team that did that, but no, they're bringing back these big name players, so you've got to start asking the question now, does that unsettle the squad? Does it become an unhappy camp? Because players who have just won a series very impressively against all odds have then been chucked out of the team for the big noises to come back. So we don't really know how that's going to play.
All of these intangibles, bad news for betting.
Yeah, it's not great for betting. And a lot of people will argue, well, Australia are a really poor white ball team and they don't have a particularly good record. I think they've lost 5 of their last 9.
But they are at home.
They are at home.
They have got a great quick bowling attack that in the right conditions could blow Sri Lanka away.
Yeah, and traditionally Sri Lanka are going to struggle in Australia on fast, bouncy pitches. Those conditions are alien to them. They want them slow and low. They want the spinners coming to the fore. But that
win in 2017.
Yes, and Adelaide is a wicket which might actually turn out to suit them for that first 2020. The average score in Big Bash matches in 2020 is 156 at the Adelaide Oval. So that suggests there's some tackiness to the wicket. And Rashid Khan, of course, plays his Big Bash cricket for Adelaide Strikers there. So there's going to be grip and purchase for the spinners. I'm conscious I'm beginning to turn towards having a bet on Sri Lanka, but I do urge caution on this series because I think it's really difficult to predict what Sri Lanka are actually going to do.
Okay, sage advice. You see, he's not just trying to get money out of your pockets. He's trying to help you, teach you, guide you. On that note, please check betting.betfair for your match previews and analysis. Ed Hawkins and has prepared lots of lovely data for you on there to guide you through these very difficult, traumatic times. Anything you want to talk about on the Australian top bat market for that series?
Well, just that this is probably the best sort of market to be playing, I think, although it is not without a conundrum.
Okay.
But we expect there to be a big value bet in the shape of the big show.
Okay.
Glenn Maxey Maxwell.
Okay.
Who has a 38% win rate on this market in the last 2 years. So that means he should be going off at about 8-5. He's never going to be going off as short as that. And we could well see prices of at least 5-1, 6-7, maybe bigger than that. So Glenn Maxwell is going to be value, we think, to be top Australia run scorer in that first 2020 at Adelaide on Sunday against Sri Lanka.
So David Warner, though, poor recent form, but, you know, presumably there's every chance that he might come good. What's his career rate?
His career rate is really good. It's 40%.
Okay. So David Warner could be, if you want a little sort of sentimental gamble.
Do you think David Warner inspires much sentimentality?
Well, I don't know. Before other things got in the way, Warner is one of the most extraordinary batsmen I've seen live. I remember watching him take India apart at Perth in 2012. It would have been in a way that, you know, only really Peterson at Headingley and later that year, actually, I've seen do similar. So there's always an element of that in terms of hoping that David Warner will reveal himself again.
Yeah, so he hasn't actually won on this market in his last 5. But as I said, he does have that 40% career win rate. And punters are probably the only group of people who actually have some sense of feeling for David Warner. Your other cricket aficionados probably love to hate him. But here, we love him. And we don't allow that negative emotion to get in the way of a bet on Warner with those kind of numbers behind him.
That's who we are, Ed. We're human beings and we are open to everyone as long as they're going to earn us money. So we move on now to the ICC World Cup qualifiers. And I know, Ed, that you have got some intel that you want to share with us.
Yeah, because it's really tricky to try to understand this tournament, because there are teams like Namibia, Singapore, Papua New Guinea, Kenya, Bermuda. How the hell do we make sense of this tournament when there's so little we know about these teams and the individuals who are in them? So what I've done, I've got in touch with a mathematical genius, And he's rated each of these teams in the 2020 World Cup qualifiers to try to help us make sense of who is a good team, who's a bad team, who's been underrated by the bookmakers, who's been overrated by the bookmakers. And from there, we can try and give punters a little bit of assistance to how to bet on this tournament.
Because actually, if it's difficult for punters, it's also difficult for bookies to come up with realistic odds too.
Yeah. So a unique way to try and find some value. Now, Tom Nielsen is his name. He's based out in New York, and he's basically created a simulation on his computer with algorithms and huge swathes of data to try and work out who's going to win this tournament. And he runs simulations game by game 2,000 times using data like an ability to avoid losing your wicket if you're a batsman, how quickly you score your runs.
What's in it for him? What does he do with this? Sorry, I've cut you off midway through there.
That's fine. You can do that. What's in it for him? He loves data. He's more of a data boffin than me.
Wow.
Yeah, which is...
So I cut you off, sorry.
Yeah.
So what factors in these data?
Well, I'm going to quote. I don't use individual player ratings for batting, for example. I break a team out into top order, upper order, lower order and tail and use a regression model to estimate batting ability. There you go.
Wow.
Then he'll use those team-based ratings to simulate through matches the figures he's been providing based on 2,000 simulations, each of which is a ball-by-ball simulation of a match. So this is deep-dive data stuff. This is not frippery. Mm. This is serious business.
Cutting-edge stuff. So tell us, what's it come up with?
So Tom and I have had some back and forth. I've sent him the odds, basically, of who's going to win this tournament. And the upshot is that he'd actually rate Scotland as favourites for the tournament.
Okay.
Now, they started the tournament as 10-3 second favourites. Obviously, games are going on whilst you're probably listening to this, so odds are subject to change. But there is an edge on Scotland. They have been underrated by Betfair Sportsbook before a ball was bowled. So,
excellent. Who else?
Well, there's also a bit of value on Namibia. He thinks they've been underrated and would have them in the top five, and the bookmakers don't have Namibia in the top five. Yeah, unfortunately, the Scots lost that opening game against Singapore, would you believe? And listen, they could be struggling as you listen to this, but what we're trying to do is just add a bit of knowledge value if these teams go deep. So likewise for Namibia, something to bear in mind if they get to the business end of things.
I once played cricket in Swakopmund.
Yeah, how did you do?
Badly.
What was
they're very ball? Good. They're very good. Very good. The Namibians. Very, you know, yeah. Impressive.
Well, there you go. Even Sam Collins, who perhaps in a different time would have been opening the bowling for England, found them
very
too hot to handle.
A very different, like an apocalyptic time. 28 days later.
That's all we've got time for on Cricket Only Better this week. Join us next time, when we'll have full analysis of England's T20 series in New Zealand, plus a look at that The 100 draft, which franchises have wasted their money and which have signed shrewdly. See you next time.